Okay. Here's one, and I had sent some of this information to the panelists ahead of time, but this one just kind of popped into my head. I had a situation a few years ago where I had just terrible issues getting information from the tour company. I think the tour company was overwhelmed, or the group person I was working with, and it was taking, you know, excess of days and almost weeks of getting information. By this time, the bride was very upset, wanting to cancel. I mean, had just turned into a raving bridezilla. And I want to know how you would have handled her. What steps would you have taken to try and do this? Do you go over the person's head that you're working with at the tour company? How would you do that, Joy?
Well, working for GoGo, you know, I've seen that issue come up, and I've had the same issue myself. So at that point, if that was happening, I would go to another tour company. I wouldn't wait on it. There's other choices out there. I would let that tour company know that if I couldn't get an issue back, or issue, if I couldn't get a response back from the tour operator or from the agent I was working with, I would go to management and I would get something done. I wouldn't let it go that long. If I couldn't get a response back and some answers to quotes, at that point, I would go on and get another quote. I would not let it get to that point. But since it did get that far, the only way of calming the bride down at that time would be to let her know that you were taking care of the problem and you didn't get your quote, but you were going to go to another tow operator. You were going to get something done immediately. You have to take care of the issue at that point.
Okay. Glenda, what would you do?
I agree with her. I think I would go, if I wasn't getting any results, I would definitely go to my BBM and for some advice on how to work with this. And my next choice would be to consider a new company to get my quotes from. My concern would be when I switched over is if the quote would have a major difference that the bride was not bride and groom were not expecting. So I would probably also be prepared to discuss that with them as well. And if they're willing to, if an increase incurred, if they were willing to accept that. And if not, if I was able to get something lower and just as good, that would be great. But I would definitely look to somebody else because I would assure the bride that I'm doing everything in my power to make sure she does have her destination wedding.
Okay, I'm going to throw a ringer into this and pass this on to you, Wendy. It's a tour company that only offers nonstop flights from the Chicago area, and that's the only one. They want nonstop flights. They have the best pricing. What do you do? What do you do when you're just not getting the answers that you want, and everybody else's prices are higher, and you have to change planes?
Okay, this is Wendy. I think what I would first do is definitely I would go over the head. Unfortunately, if that person doesn't have the time for you, then I think you need to find someone who does. In certain cases, I would find out, is there a BDM that you could work with? If there's not, there's always a manager. There's always someone else. I think that, like, for an example, I had a situation at a resort, which I found out didn't work with the supplier. And I was working with Funjet for a wedding, and this particular resort in Cancun had advertised for a complimentary wedding, and it turned out they would only do the complimentary wedding if the wedding was booked directly with them and not through the supplier. And it was a similar situation. I already had two of the I had the bride and groom booked, and I had two of their other rooms booked as well. And I actually had to sit down with the bride and say, look, we could do it this way, or my suggestion would be is that we change it, and we change where you're going to have your wedding. And that was very difficult for me to have that conversation. But that was after I'd actually gone up the ranks at FunJet to find out if there was any way that they could work this out. And when I found out there was no recourse, then you have to figure out another solution. In this case, with the direct flights, if the only one having the direct flights and that what's what the bride wants, then it behooves me to make that happen. And if it's just some, I hate to say it, but some pencil pusher who's not doing their job right, that's not going to stop me from providing the best service to my client.
Glenda, have you encountered a situation where you've had an upset client?
A difficult client yet, thank goodness. I've been able to, we've been working well so far, but I did have a situation recently with a honeymoon package that I had going to St. Lucia where I booked my client on American Airlines, and they were, you know, a great couple to work with. And then the day of their departure to go to St. Lucia, I get a phone call stating that they were in Miami, and they had been bumped off their flight. Bride's crying, and, you know, I'm shocked. So I quickly, you know, forced, they did have travel insurance. So as soon as I got them off the phone, I called to see what I could do. I did contact direct call to St. Lucia and explain the situation that they were not going to get in that day. I then called American Airlines because the American Airlines had told the client that it was the travel agent's fault. Even though I had seats, they had just actually overbooked. So Sandals agreed to give them an extra night if they were able to take it, and American Airlines agreed to not charge them the fees. And I was able to contact the couple back again and give them those options. And in the meantime, so that I could help them out on the next side of the trip, I sent them a text so that when they got ready to leave St. Lucia, if they did elect to use the extra days, that they knew exactly what their confirmation numbers were for their seats and everything. I contacted Sandals and asked them if they would put something special in their room because they would be getting there a day late on their honeymoon. So Sandals agreed to send some extra champagne and fruit baskets and some things there on my behalf with a note and let them know throughout the week that they're their travel agent had been checking on them. And they called, after Sandals called me back and told me that they were doing well. Well, when they get back to come back stateside, I mean to Miami, they get bumped again. American Airlines, even though they had seats. And so the bride's calling again. And I'm like, this is crazy. So all I could do at that point was start working with your insurances and writing letters of apology because they knew, they agreed it wasn't my fault. I mean, they had everything in writing. It was American Airlines, and, you know, all I could do, I followed up with them and apologized and just sent them some congratulatory notes from me, but that was the craziest scenario I've had so far, and it was not, it was limited to what I could do. I just wrote letters to American Airlines, and American Airlines has not responded, but they actually overbooked, and nobody was willing to get off the flight because everybody were honeymooners going to St. Lucia. So it was just unfortunate.
Okay. And Wendy, how about you? What have you encountered?
I've encountered not so much the bridezilla, but the mother-in-law from a different planet, lower than us. the type that made me almost want to tell the bride, you know, don't walk, run from this, because it happened to be a jet, her fiance tended, is an only child of a woman who is a control freak. And as we all know, control freaks and destination weddings do not go hand in hand. And the bride's been wonderful to deal with and so excited, and she wants to go, and he's all for it. And then the mother-in-law has been calling constantly with, you know, why they want to do this, why do you want to do that? And at first, I let her vent herself, and then I said, you know, this is really a question you should ask your daughter-in-law, and this is something that's important to them, and I think your role in this, especially since she's not paying for it, was to either join in their joy or not. And then I started getting calls from the bride saying that mother-in-law wants to do this and do this, and her fiance is not helping. And I realized all of a sudden I have become the marital counselor. And then I get the next phone call from the mother-in-law saying, what do I do to make my insurance work? And I said, pardon me? She said, the engagement is off. See? Like this. And I said to her, well, first of all, calm down. You know, this is could be pre-bridal jitters. And then I had the bride calling. And it was just a week of sort of, I felt very much not just their agent, but, you know, it was beyond hand-holding. I almost felt like I needed to fly to Detroit from Chicago and have them all sit in a room together. Needless to say, 2 weeks down the line, the fiancé and the bride and groom are still getting married. It's still on. And I also had to learn personally in that situation when to really take a step back and to not actually say anything, just to let people talk. Because what they started doing is using my words against me to each other. I did save the wedding. It's still going on. But it's one of those situations that I think the fact of who is the person that is your main contact person, and to actually find out from the bride how much information does she want to share with either the family members, her mother, her sister, her mother-in-law, and learn from there that otherwise it's a matter of, well, why don't you refer to the bride on that? And so that was a lesson for me and a very interesting situation.
That's fabulous, because I think, especially in this niche, that's one that one of us could encounter. And I think you handled it and you learned from it. And, you know, it's kind of scary, because what happens if they tell you it's off, cancel it, and then you do, and then 2 weeks later they call and say it's back on? I mean, that could have opened up a whole other nightmare. But
well, that's exactly it. Like I said, you know what? It's far enough in advance. Let's let the tempers go. Why don't you have the conversation? And let's check back in 2 weeks and see where your feelings are. You know, and if you need me before that, I'm here. But otherwise, why don't you, you know. And I know myself, it was very interesting, because the mother of the groom called me later on and said, yeah, you know, I'm so sorry about that. It was just so, upsetting all the way around. And you realize that, you know, I think of putting a wedding on as almost like creating a musical, and there's all the different, you know, personalities and artistic directors and the band members and everyone with an opinion. And just like you usually advise the bride that she has to tune it out, because everyone has questions like, well, why do you want to go there? She's got to tune that out and realize what this is about. We as agents also have to realize that we can't take everything as a personal offense either. So
that's true. That's so true. And we do. We get personal, and, you know, we work with these brides for months on end, and you do develop a relationship. But, yeah, you do have to step back and keep that perspective. And, you know, along with our travel consultant hat, we sometimes are the marriage counselor, the psychologist, the lawyer, everything. You know, we need those degrees to finish our work. Okay, John, you had mentioned we've got some questions. How about if we field those to Glenda and Wendy right now?
Absolutely. How do you control a situation where there you end up having too many decision makers on the family's end? And a couple of your scenarios have alluded to this, where you as the agent approach the bride and say, how often and in what ways do you want me to communicate with you, weekly, biweekly, monthly, and who else in the family is going to want to be in the loop with you? And a couple of agents had asked earlier, what if you get too many people in the loop? What if it starts out with the bride, and then the bride says, well, I'd like my sister who's helping me plan things, I want her to be involved, and then the mother and the mother-in-law get in the loop, and then after a while you start getting calls from the fifth person in the loop who says, I know the bride, I know she would want you to change this. How do you balance that, that need to communicate with anybody the bride wants you to communicate with, versus limiting who's making decisions that the bride may or may not even know about?
Glenda?
Yes, when I heard that, I would think there's too many chiefs in this
I would, you know, set the time, you know, set the group, say, okay, who, stick with what I said, who are my contacts? And that if someone calls me and says, you know, I think this, then I would refer them back to the bride, saying, okay, speak with the bride or whatever, or the other contact person, and let them speak on your behalf. You know, and if this is an agreement with the bride, then that their representatives will speak to me. But my agreement is to only limit the number of persons I have contact with to keep, you know, things calm and, you know, and in order. Because once you get too many people in, you lose control.
Okay, Wendy?
Well, I think this is where you come in and say that you're a destination wedding specialist and that you've had experience with other families and you know that their family is probably the most wonderful family in the world, but that you have found when there's too many people in the actual inner core that messages get lost, communication breaks down, and feelings can get hurt. So I think the best thing is you basically, to me, it should be the bride and perhaps the groom. You know, I did get an email once from a groom saying, you know, in the future I would like you to CC me on everything as well. And I found out basically in his situation, he was the one keeping track of all the money, and he wanted to see what she was signing up for. So fair enough. But I think it's more a matter of it's our role to communicate to them that we will be having direct communication with them. As far as their guests, we will serve in a travel and an advisory capacity, and if they need any help with the destination or any special needs. But as far as the decision makings on the wedding go, that we refer back to the bride. If she wants to share the information with her family, that's fine, but we're not involved in that communication.
Okay, great. John, another question.
Yes, a couple of agents had asked, and I'm combining some questions here. How do you decide whether it's better for you to communicate with your clients on the phone, by email, or even in writing on paper? Are there certain things that you always put down in an email or in writing to cover your tracks later so the bride or someone else can't come back to you and say, you never told me that or you never updated me on that? The agents are asking, are there certain things that you as a practice always do in writing by email or on paper so that you can cover your tracks later?
I'll jump in on this one, actually. Yes, anything that requires money, whether it's accepting or refunding or canceling, definitely needs to be in writing or on an email. And I create a folder in my email account for each bride, for their wedding, and then each one of their guests, a subfolder. And any correspondence between guests, confirmations from tour companies, correspondence from the wedding coordinator, all that goes into those subfolders under that client's folder. And that way, if someone says, you didn't email me, or I never told you I didn't want the insurance, you can always go back and say, well, according to the email on November 12th, you decided that you didn't want it, and then you have that. So email, even if I talk to them and they tell me they don't want the insurance, I will send an email and say, to confirm our conversation, you are declining the insurance. I will send them that email, have them return it back, and then, of course, I always have them sign the waiver. So I will mail it to them. I will send them a return envelope addressed to me, stamped, so that all they have to do is sign it, mark the X that they're declining the insurance, and return it back to me. It's 46 cents, but you know what? It might save a lot of headaches down the road. So that's one of the things that I do with my clients. I want documented. I want a paper trail. It's come to save me a few times.
This is Glenda, and I wholeheartedly agree with that. I do the same thing that you do. I keep a paper trail of everything because things change. People forget things. And I don't want to start questioning myself and ask myself, did I remember or not remember something? So I carry a paper trail at all times.
Wendy, how do you handle things?
Well, actually, I love your suggestion of sending the self-addressed envelope to them with the waiver. I must admit, I mean, I do keep a paper trail, but more an email trail. And one of the things that I know that I've needed to do in my business is do better with getting the insurance waiver. I haven't felt as comfortable getting the credit card waivers. I mean, getting the credit card information that way. Just because people have balked at having to mail it or send it to me because they're afraid of identity, you know, theft and so forth. And I was curious and wanted to throw that back at the panel if you had people that had no problem giving you the credit card over the phone but didn't want to write it in a document or and so forth. But I really love that idea, Lisa. So that I'm writing down right now as we speak. So.
Well, good. Joy, are you back on with us?
I'm back on.
All right. Well, we missed a few things, but we're just talking about, you know, some questions about dealing with the clients. I'm sure you've heard John say it. So what would you do?
I do the same. I have an email address for, or not address, but I have it set up for each of them for their itineraries. I keep track of everything that I send out. And as far as their paperwork for their credit cards, they have several ways they can send that back to me. They can fax it back to me. They can email it back to me. They can, you know, scan it and email back. They can mail it to me. They can call me with it. And I can fill the information in for them after they fill out all their information and fax it to me. Then I can fill in their credit card that they give to me by phone, as long as they have signed it, the paperwork, and then I have that part for them. So there's several different ways of doing it.
Okay. And another thing that I do on that credit card form, just as an example, is I will put the type of card, you know, the Visa or MasterCard, and then I put ending in and then those last four numbers. So while they're not, yeah, and while they're not actually, you know, sending that through the mail, even though the mail handles how many gazillion pieces of mail each day, you know, I still get that signature in relation to that credit card. So that's how I do it with the charge form. So and my charge form and my insurance waiver all on the same form. So okay, John, do you have another question?
I do, and I know we're close to time here, but I think this is a great question. Kim, thank you for sending this in. It deals with pricing, which we haven't talked a whole lot about, but I think it's a great question. Kim says, what do you do if you have a bride who's declining every property recommendation and idea you come up with because what she wants is an all-inclusive package, including air, 7 nights, a 5-star property, and her budget's $1,000. The best you can do is $1,200 for that type of package at a 3-star property. So how do you deal with a difficult client who has really overblown expectations of what their $1,000 budget's going to bring?
Tell her to call someone else. Oh, no. Wendy, how would you handle this one?
Actually, very similar. It's a matter of screening. If it's not a matter of setting expectations where you feel afterwards, I usually let them know that for, you know, this country, this is kind of the range you need to be looking at. And if this is what you're looking for, and that's really your budget, then perhaps I'm not the right one to work with. Because I also, to me, it takes a lot more time to try and find that one that's underneath, you know, a 1200 than it is to be able to give them several options at 1200. I had recently where, you know, I had a groom say,
to me that, you know, he wanted it to be $1,500 and less, and he couldn't understand why he couldn't book it 12 or 13 months out, and why, for example, in the case he was doing sandals, why sandals wasn't more willing to work with them. And I say, well, first of all, I can't guarantee a pricing when air isn't ready yet, but based on it, I can tell you it's approximately this. Sandals doesn't discount, they run promotions, so you're not in fear of that type of pricing. And I said, in all honesty, it's more a matter of what you're looking for and what you want to offer your guests. So I think if you set the expectations and they're balking at it, then honestly, then they're more tire kickers, and I don't think that that bride will ever be satisfied. And I think you're better off looking for a new client than actually trying to satisfy somebody who's got a, you know, who's not listening nor has realistic expectations.
Okay, great. Well, we just have another minute or so. Anybody, Joy or Glenda, have a quick, you know, something else to add to that? Or
this is Glenda. I don't have anything else to add to that because it's obviously the person does not have realistic expectations for a 5-star at that rate for that number of days.
Okay, good. Joy?
I just had that, and I don't have the patience for that anymore. You know, I'm tired of dealing with that type of client, and when they come to me, I basically tell them they just can't get Cancun for $1,000 a person. That I can maybe find a package in Puerto Vallarta or Mazatlan, but not Cancun. I'm upfront with them.
Yeah, good. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. We appreciate you all, again, taking the time to call in and put up with us with our technical difficulties. But thanks for those who submitted questions and to our panel members, Joy, Wendy, and Glenda. Thanks again, everybody, and have a great day, and go sell something.
You too. Bye.